A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 313. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about The Mad Death. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This was BBC's three-part drama, 360-minute episodes, giving us a scary view and quite a grim look at what might happen if rabies infected animals in the UK at this big epidemic scale.
Yes, absolutely. We're going to be talking about literally mad dogs and Englishmen, I think, Brian.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. And how often do I say this? There are some familiar British invaders' faces going to come up as well in the cast that we're going to talk about.
There certainly are. It is an interesting cast. But let's get into the setup of the show before the cast.
So it is the early 80s. Britain is very concerned about the possibility of rabies coming across the English Channel. And amidst all this heightened concern, a visitor from France smuggles in her beloved cat, literally, I think, in the pocket of her fur coat, and manages to get it through customs. But of course, the cat has been in contact with a rabies-infected fox before she left France. And we're going to be talking quite a bit about foxes, I think, Brian.
Yes, they are an important part of this one, for sure. And soon this infection is spreading from animal to animal. And an American businessman contracts it as well and is in hospital with what seems to be a mystery illness. It isn't clear exactly what's happening until characteristic features and symptoms of rabies start appearing on this man.
They do indeed. And there are some interesting medical scenes in the hospital, which we'll talk about as we get to as well. And of course, once they realise what they're dealing with, that it is rabies, the government springs into action, putting into place a very sort of like pre-planned and quite drastic disaster plan, which involves them calling on certain medical and veterinary experts as they struggle to contain the spread of rabies in the UK.
Yes, that's right. The health department and their actions and these sort of emergency plans, this all plays into this drama quite prominently.
So the characters, and the first three characters, or at least the actors who played them, were going to be very familiar to us. We start with Tom Siegler, who is this American businessman, and it will come as no surprise to regular listeners to hear that the go-to actor for an American businessman was, of course, Ed Bishop. So if you're playing the drinking game, I think that's you have to take a shot now, Brian, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
And of course, he rather disastrously rescues what appears to be an injured fox from the roadside when he's driving home. And looks after this fox in his garage. And of course, that's going to have pretty awful consequences.
Yes, for sure. He is not the most prominent character in this show, but he certainly has a key part of the story and of the drama. And we'll certainly be talking about that character and the performance more as we go. Anne Maitland, played by Barbara Kellerman, who we remember as Deli Lomas from the series 1990, and the White Witch and other characters in the Chronicles of Narnia. Maitland is a government medical officer who is charged with containing the epidemic. So she's sort of the health department person who is tasked with getting control of this and avoiding loss of life, basically.
Yes, absolutely. And Barbara Kellerman again being called on to play a sort of government senior advisor, I suppose. She's very good at it. We then have the other sort of expert to add to Anne Maitland, which is Michael Hilliard, who is played by the actor Richard Heffer, a very familiar face on British TV in the 70s and 80s, I think, but to us probably best known for playing Jimmy Garland in two episodes of the original Survivors series on TV. And it's a role that he's gone on to play for the Big Finish Survivors series, I believe, Brian.
That's right. He was always a very memorable character in Survivors, so it was nice to see him come back on the audio dramas.
But here he is playing the senior veterinary officer, a vet who's had experience dealing with previous rabies outbreaks elsewhere in the world. He is a tough, no-nonsense, almost a rogue outsider brought in by the government, has quite hardline views about the steps that need to be taken to control the spread of rabies in the animal population. And he's often seen roaming the countryside in his combat greens with a rifle. And I believe the Jimmy Garland episode was called Garland's War. And I think he had a similar background. He was sort of ex-military in that as well, I think, Brian.
Similar, yes. Johnny Dalroy, played by Richard Morant, is a landowner and squire of the manor on which much of the action takes place. And he is a thorn in the side for Hilliard and Maitland, and sort of represents some of the resistance that they are faced with, in that people don't believe that this is a real serious issue and that these drastic actions that they're taking have to be taken or should be taken.
Yes, and we'll mention another character who also sort of epitomizes that resistance to the control ideas. Miss Stonecroft, played by another very well-known face from British TV and film, Brenda Bruce. Miss Stonecroft is a reclusive older woman living in a large, almost, I should say, decaying country house, which is filled with her beloved animals. She's almost, I thought, Brian, like a sort of Miss Havisham character in this house all by herself. And she completely opposes the government's contain and control strategy, particularly as it applies to her animals. And they will have some quite serious results, a result of that. And it's this, you know, one of the conflicts is, as you say, that the landowners and the British public are not entirely convinced about the merits of this contain and control strategy. Of course, they're animal lovers and don't see that this should apply to their animals and pets.
Yes, and that's something that is, I thought, quite fascinating in this serial, and we will come back to talk about that idea in more detail for sure.
So carrying on a little bit with the plot of The Mad Death, as we've said, there are infected foxes on both sides of the channel. There are infected cats and dogs before long, and we will see packs of dogs acting in a very sort of dangerous and unpleasant fashion. So there's several scenes of dog attacks and so on, but even a simple scratch from a cat or even a lick from an infected cat with its saliva could possibly infect a human. So it's grim stuff.
It is. And we also get Anne Maitland going to this hospital where Tom Siegler, this American businessman, is suffering, and with the context that she knows about, it becomes very clear what's going on. And they bring Hilliard in as their expert to do this and to help contain all of this stuff. And of course, Hilliard is sort of strict and somewhat alarmist about this. And it's the type of thing where, to start with, other people involved tend to think that he's quite radical in what he proposes to do. And by the later stages of it, it's clear that he was justified in wanting to do those things. And of course, they're soon running around the countryside in Land Rovers and helicopters. And of course, the rifles are out and they're going after some of these infected animals to avoid the further spread.
Yes, and of course, it's an interesting show because, as we've said, it's got the medical, it's got the veterinary, and then, of course, it's got this social aspect, which Dr. Maitland particularly is having to deal with because, you know, the British public, famed for being animal lovers, And unusually for a show called The Mad Death about rabies, you think we'd be more afraid, but they don't want to lock up or quarantine their pets. And so as well as the sort of on-the-ground battles that we see that gives us some action sequences with, as we said, Hilliard and Maitland rushing around the countryside with rifles and the army and so on. But also we've got this court of public opinion, and can they swing the views of the public that this is really serious and they need to do something about it?
We see at one point in the show a letter to the editor in a newspaper quoted where the person is saying, why would you take these pets that are some people's only companions and only interaction they get? Why would you take that away for something that is clearly not going to be a serious problem that would affect their animals? And we get things on that theme coming up again and again in this show.
Yes, fascinating idea. Rather well done by this series.
So we should get into our production notes.
So, The Mad Death was adapted from a book of the same name by the author Nigel Slater, who I presume is not the same Nigel Slater, the British TV chef who's so successful over here on this side of the pond. And that was a novel, I guess, from, I think, the late 70s, I believe, Brian.
Yeah, I understand it was one of a group of sort of pulp horror novels that were tapping into the zeitgeist of the time and talking about the fear of a rabies epidemic and things with animals, with, you know, images of snarling dogs on book covers and this sort of thing. But that theme that animals that are around, domestic animals, would be turned against us through rabies or through something else, this was sort of a popular idea at the time that we had in books and so on.
Yes, I do remember some of these books from the bookshelves at the time with their particularly lurid covers and the sort of snarling dogs in all of them, I think.
Yes, of course. Sean Hignett adapted The Mad Death for television. He is, I think, best known for writing Crown Court and also writing for Emmerdale, but he also wrote a couple of episodes of The Omega Factor, a supernatural show that we covered quite some time ago.
Yes, that is way back, but it was a show that we did find quite enjoyable and intriguing.
Yes, interesting things in that, certainly in the writing. And in this case, we actually had a BBC Scotland production, and that gave us all of these countryside scenes that were shot on film in the Scottish Highlands, which looks very good. And it's something that we've seen on BBC Scotland productions a few times now.
Yes, and they certainly do get out and about in the Highlands for the outside, you know, shooting. So, yeah, it's great to look at. This series was directed by Robert Young, who also directed six episodes of Robin of Sherwood. There's another series from the Wayback Machine for us on British Invaders, Brian. And he also directed some episodes of Jeeves and Wooster. And he would later go on to make a very sort of critically acclaimed BAFTA-nominated series called GBH, starring Robert Lindsay and Michael Palin. But here he is doing The Mad Death. Interestingly, they had cooperation and support from the Ministry of Agriculture, who obviously saw, I guess, the benefit of a show highlighting the risks of rabies. So they had expert medical and veterinary advisors. And of course, for a show like this, they needed lots of animal wranglers, as I believe they're known, Brian. The handlers who have to look after their well-trained dogs and cats and even foxes and then make them appear menacing and dangerous on screen.
Yes, and that I think shows that they had all of this advice from medical and veterinary sources, and that they had lots of animal handlers with, you know, large numbers of animals involved with this. It sort of adds to the depth and the scope of this show, I think.
Yes. I mean, I should point out that there are a couple of scenes of actors clearly wrestling with dummy animals, which for some reason slightly reminded me of that rather infamous sequence from the Robert Powell Doomwatch episode about rats, killer rats. But it's not quite, I think, to that level of obviousness or ridiculousness. So it's not too bad. And certainly the animals looking menacing and snarling is pretty well done.
Yes. I think they kept the dummy scenes to a minimum and didn't, you know, let us see too much. There is some of that, as you're going to have in a show like this. But it was not bad. And on the whole, the animals and the danger of the animals, and we do see a lot of animals here. On the whole, it was done quite well.
Yes, indeed.
It also has this opening sequence that is quite disturbing and spooky with the first few lines of the hymn, All Things Bright and Beautiful, being whispered, I believe, by a child. And some background music going on with that makes a quite spooky and disturbing effect.
If you want to create a spooky intro for your TV show, then having a child do a slowed down sort of whispered version of either a nursery rhyme or a well-known sort of hymn, that's pretty chilling stuff, actually, Brian.
Yes, and it's done partly in rhythm and partly not in rhythm, which makes it seem even a little bit more off somehow.
It's genuinely creepy.
The Mad Death was shot in 1981, but it took some time and it was not broadcast until July of 1983 on three nights. I believe it was broadcast weekly, and that was on BBC One.
It was indeed. And we know from some of our internet searches for details about this show that it got largely positive reviews, particularly with letters praising it in the Radio Times magazine. Although I did read one of the letters, Brian, which perhaps unsurprisingly came from a dog lover who was questioning the use of German Shepherd dogs being made to look like the infected dogs, and saying that it was a much maligned particular species of dog. So there you go. The British animal lovers still coming out to protest the show.
That somehow adds to the effectiveness of the show, that some of the things they were describing and how people reacted actually happened to their own show.
Yes, amazing. And we know it got a repeat on BBC in June of 1985. So there we are, made in 81, broadcast in 83 and 85. We're not really sure of the delay from, you know, the reason for the delay from 81 to 83. Haven't been able to find out anything about that. It obviously sat on a shelf or in the editing booth for a while, I guess, Brian.
Yes, and after that 1985 repeat, it didn't have a whole lot in the way of distribution. It was rebroadcast on UK Gold at one point, but I think it was only broadcast there once, and I'm not aware of any international distribution, although it may have had some. I haven't read anything about that.
Okay, let's turn to the availability of this series, if we've as ever interested you and you might want to look at it yourself. In Region 2, of course, we do try to cover shows that do have some form of official release, so we are fortunate, as ever. There was, I should just mention, there was an edited film VHS release, so they edited it into a sort of film length, and that came out in the late 80s on VHS. But of more sort of relevance now, that in 2018, Simply Media, which I think is one of the BBC offshoots, released the DVD version that came out last year. Sadly, no extras whatsoever, just the three episodes. Perhaps slightly pricey at £14 currently on Amazon, and not available on any of the streaming sites over here. So now we turn to look across the pond to North America and Canada. Brian, I guess?
Well, there is no release in Region 1. There is an import that we saw selling on Amazon.com for about $15, which is a pretty good price, less than the UK price. But an import and watching on a region-free DVD player is basically your only option for this one.
Okay, and not on any of the streamers there, I guess.
I did not see it available streaming. There is also that original book, which not surprisingly is out of print, as many books from that era would be. But it is available on the secondhand market, so you can find that if you're looking for it.
But as ever, again, regular listeners won't be too surprised to say that we haven't read it. We concentrate on the visual, these broadcast shows. We rarely get time to read the books, unfortunately.
Yes, and in this case, my feeling is that probably at this point anyway, the broadcast television production is probably a more interesting thing to look at than the original novel. That's sort of a guess on my part, but that's where I would lean for this one. Were other things, I might be more likely to go to the novels if I can.
Okay. Interesting point. Yes, we are, as you say, this one's probably more interesting on DVD.
So that wraps up the first half of our discussion of The Mad Death. Next time, we will talk a bit more about the plot and some of the things that go on there and some of the science and medical things that happen and some of the romance and action that is sometimes a must to keep things upbeat for television, apparently. So we'll get to some of those things as well.
Yes, I sense we'll be talking a little bit about the medicine. We'll also be putting in one of my regular pauses to note how all of speculative fiction television often seems to reflect society's fears at the time. And I'll maybe wonder just how many cases of rabies there have been in France over the years, particularly since this show was made.
Yes, certainly interesting things there. And of course, we will get to our own recommendations and what we thought about this particular production. But until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com, and please search for British Invaders on Facebook, and you can find our Facebook group there. We always have some good discussion and hopefully not too rabid conversation going on there.
Yes, plenty of sane talk. And we are proud members of the Voice of Geeks Network. Find out more at vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. This is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also, signing off.